Blog Talk Radio.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
To Punch Drunk Critics Live. I am Travis Hobson from the Punch Drunk Critics and Examiner.com. And as you can tell, John is not here today. He's taking a week off to take care of some personal stuff. I don't know if you can tell from my voice, but I am a little under the weather as well. I've got my nice tall cup of orange juice here, so I should be able to make it through the show. Our friend Tim Gordon, who you all know, frequent guest on the show, is going to be joining us in a few minutes. We're going to be talking about a couple of movies that are highly anticipated for a couple of different reasons. One is, of course, Paranormal Activity 4, which I already know Tim didn't see, so I'm not even going to ask him about it. I'll let you know about that one myself. But also, Alex Cross. Alex Cross is a continuation of the adaptations of James Patterson's novels based around his popular forensic psychologist, Alex Cross. In the first two movies, Morgan Freeman played the character in Along Came a Spider and Kiss the Girls. This one is an origin story, and it stars Tyler Perry in the lead role, which, as you can probably guess, is interesting, to say the least, to see him doing something so different than what we're used to seeing him do with his Madea movies and basically that whole cottage industry that he has over there. I mean, the guy is pretty much owned that corner of the market, the family-friendly, kind of the African-American wing of the family-friendly comedies, romances, and stuff like that. He kind of owns it. The guy's a hell of a businessman. There's nobody's going to be able to dispute that. His movies have a very loyal following. People will see him in pretty much anything. Or will they? I mean, they've paid to see him play similar, play Madea plenty of times, and they'll pay to see the movies that kind of chart those same courses. Tend to be family comedies, family dramas, and stuff like that. Very soapy. But Alex Cross is something a little different. And before Tim comes in here, let's just go ahead and cue up his music.
Keep making noise! Keep making noise! Yeah! Here we go!
Yeah. As you can tell by the chuckle, that is Tim Gordon. What's up, man?
All right, man. Okay, first of all, I didn't realize that Jay Nolan wasn't going to be here, and I was sitting in for Jay Nolan. I don't have an issue doing it. I just didn't know. Hello? Can you hear me, Travis? Hello?
Sorry about that, man. It sounds like I dropped out for a second there.
I was saying, I didn't know I was supposed to be your co-host this week.
I told you, you're going to be here for the first segment to talk about Alex Cross. But yeah, John is taking the weekend off. And of course, as soon as he does that, we run into technical difficulties. So hopefully that won't happen for the rest of the show. Otherwise, I might be asking you to hold on a little bit longer so you can can bridge things until I come back in. But anyway, how are you doing, man?
Man, I'm 5-2. You know, life is good, man. I'm ahead in three fantasy leagues. I'm having a great Sunday. What about you?
I'm happy for you. My Bears play tomorrow. My fantasy team is it's garbage is all I can really say. And it sucks because I have so much talent, but they don't want to play well all on the same weekend. They want to have one guy play good and the other two play like crap, and then somebody else will play good the next week. it's pretty sad. So what can you do?
Hey, man, all you can do is put a lineup together, man. And if they underperform, hey, all I can do is, hey, there's always next week.
Exactly. That's pretty much it. So I wanted to have you on here, of course, to talk about Alex Cross. This is the new action franchise starring our favorite guy, Tyler Perry. Before we get into it, let's hear just a little bit of a clip from Alex Cross.
Cross.
Good afternoon, detectives. Am I calling at a bad time?
That depends where you're calling and tell me where you are so I can hunt you down like a rabid dog.
Oh, that's good. I can feel that. I mean, you look so numb at the funeral today. But now the pain's really starting to flow, isn't it?
Here's another emotion for you. It's pleasure. The pleasure I'm going to get when I watch your soul come oozing out of your body, you maggot.
Well, Confucius said when setting off on the path of revenge, dig two graves.
That's fine with me as long as you're in one of them.
All right, now I picked that clip on purpose, and I'm sure you can tell that I did that on purpose because
right.
that clip right there pretty much encapsulates the entire film for me. it's as anyone who just listens to that can tell, there's a lot of like back and forth between Alex Cross and the villain here, played by Matthew Fox, who I actually thought was pretty good in the role. But their banter back and forth was about as dry and unemotional and bland as it could get. And Tyler Perry in particular, right there. I mean, did you, he said he was angry. I mean, or something.
Hello?
Sounds like that's going to happen every few minutes or so for me.
and I'm back.
But anyway, did he sound angry to you? What did he sound like? Because Tyler Perry did not sound like anything to me right there.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What was he doing? Was he trying to play like a angry Batman type or something right there? I don't know what he was doing.
Well, that scene that you picked on purpose, man. I got to give you credit, man. That was a good one, man. Because you're absolutely right, because that does show how ridiculous, like, the dialogue, like, you know, as long as you're in one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's
like... Now, again, I can't wait till we start talking about this, because, again, I mean, I've been taking a pounding across the board nationally over this film. And, I mean, everybody from you... who was first to, you know, my friend Rebecca Theodore Vachon up in New York, and, you know, Ivan, another good friend of mine, called me up. He was like, dude, it's terrible. I'm like, what's wrong with it? Like, what are you guys – and here's what I would honestly say.
Okay.
What do you honestly expect from a guy who has made 14 movies and in 7 of them he's played – a woman in drag.
Right. Well,
honestly expect that you were going to get in this role?
But that's my thing with Tyler Perry, and you and I both agree. One hell of a businessman, smart guy, right? We know that. But my position with him has always been that when he's not wearing a dress and a wig, he has no screen presence whatsoever, like none. Now he's a big guy. We talked about that before. He's a big guy. He looks the part, but as an actor, I don't think he knows how to portray roles where he does not write the script. Like, I don't think he knows how to play emotions unless he wrote them himself and knows how the scene is supposed to go. I don't think he knows how to do that yet, and maybe he will in time. But as of this film, he doesn't seem to know how to do it.
Well, you know what, man? I will cede to you on this one because I'm like, you know, I will admit that, you know, just as I did on my show the other day, there are times, man, where I just literally want to watch a movie. And, right. And I mean, I know what it is going in, and I just accept it for what it is, man. I've never, and you've heard me say this two or three times. Mm-hmm. I've never said it's a great movie. I didn't even say it was a good movie. My exact quote was, I thought it was going to be terrible, and I've seen much worse, which is an honest assessment on my part.
Well, my
I have is, seen
I'm,
much worse.
I'm putting you in the position that you are. Okay. So anyway, I don't know. It seems like it's every 5 minutes. I don't know what's going on with Skype today. But I'm putting you in a position that you often put me in, which is defending a movie that I don't think is all that good. You tend to do that with me sometimes, because I think you're way too hard on a movie, and then I'm left to defend a movie that I think is mediocre. And I feel like that's what you're doing right now. You're defending a movie that's mediocre because I think this is one of the worst pieces of crap of the year. And I actually do think that way. And it's more than just Tyler Perry. We talked about this earlier this week on your show. It's more than just Tyler Perry. It's the decision to cast Rob Cohen as the director, who is a guy who did XXX, Fast and the Furious, and Stealth. Not a guy you would hire to do a crime procedural. He's not the guy for that role. And this film is shaky. It's chaotic. The camera does not stop moving for a moment. And it's just not. It's funny. But it's not. I'm not joking. It's just a bad fit. If there was another director here, it might have been a film that made a little bit more sense, a little bit more competent. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean, and I find that you put me in a position where I'm apologizing for Tyler Perry to be almost like ludicrous beyond belief for people who know who I am. And again, I don't have anything personal against Tyler Perry. I met him once.
Right.
I didn't get a chance to ask him a question because they blocked me because they knew that I would ask him something that would make him uncomfortable. But again, like I said with this movie, maybe I need to rewatch it with some fresh eyes because there are too many people that I respect who have slammed this movie. I mean, across the board. And again, you know me, that if I don't respect what you said, I would really care less. I mean, it's not that I don't care about you or Omar or Dow Lockhart or Ivan or Rebecca. I'm just like, well, maybe it is me because there are too many people that I know, like, as I said earlier, who I respect, who have told me how bad this movie is. I'm just laughing because my honest answer is, like I told you earlier, I'm not really sure. I mean, after we all knew that Idris Elba was supposed to have this role and didn't take it, after we all knew that Rob Cohen was hired to direct this movie, after we saw the trailers, I told you, I thought it was going to be absolutely terrible.
Right.
And maybe he caught me on a good moment where I was like, wow, I didn't really think he was that terrible. But apparently I was wrong. I had a domino moment.
I never saw a scene where he played. Tell you what, Tim. What we're gonna do is after we finish talking about Alex Cross, I'm gonna let you talk about the Black Reel Awards for a few minutes. because I really want you to talk about what's coming up this year for that. Okay?
Oh, absolutely. Not a problem.
And then while you're doing that, I'm going to reboot and try to get this thing figured out. It should only take me a couple minutes. But let's finish up with Alex Cross first. No, I didn't see a scene with Tyler Perry in it that he played correctly emotionally. Now, a lot of that was the script, which is admittedly awful. But there are scenes with him and Ed Burns where they are supposedly like childhood friends, and now they're partners in the Force. That they don't really seem like people who were ever friends. And I got that feeling with him and his wife, who I thought was pretty good, played by Carmen Njogo, who I like a lot. They didn't seem like a married couple to me. And a lot of it is because I feel like Tyler Perry, again, was so stiff in those scenes that he seemed uncomfortable in the same room with these people. That, I think that was the main thing for me. He just did not seem comfortable in the role.
Well, you know what, man? I can honestly believe, and I think as we talked about on Thursday, that I think there is that you're looking at a situation where you had a lot of chaos and uncertainty mm-hmm. on the set. You know, it's no secret that Cohen is hired to direct the movie. Perry has probably directed more films than Cohen. Ed Burns probably has directed as many, if not more, than Cohen. So you have a situation, man, where, as you said, and I think you may have said it, or Gal Lockhart from Black Box Office said it, that if without proper direction of these actors, or in this case, these directors turned actors, that they'll just go back to doing what it is that they do, and they'll take charge and do their own thing.
I do think there's something to that.
You don't give them any direction.
I do think there's something to that. I really do. I mean, when you have a director, and I think on your show I compared the analogy to a football coach who doesn't have the respect of his team or something like that, or a football coach where there's a big star and he's a bigger star than a coach. You know, he does what he wants to do, regardless of what the director says. And in this case, Rob Cohen, he's been around a long time, but, you know, his movies, it's like whatever with him. I don't know if he has the kind of clout to be able to tell someone like Tyler Perry what to do, or the clout to be able to tell someone like Ed Burns what to do, or if he even is the type of director who would manage an actor in that way. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. I don't know if he's really an actor's director, because he hasn't really had that kind of movie where acting has been the priority. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I think the bottom line is, which I think really is really awkward, you know, in light of all of these developments with these reviews, mm-hmm. is that two things I can notice. One is James Patterson. I saw him on a Today Show in an interview speak highly of Tyler Perry. And he thought Perry did a great job. And, you know, he would love to have him back, which incidentally, they announced soon afterwards that they had greenlit the sequel for a movie that people universally across the board hated, that I think last check was at about 7% on Rotten Tomatoes. So I don't know. It makes for a really interesting situation, you know, because how do you move forward with a sequel if you're not going to have Perry in the role? And if you're not going to have Perry in the role, and you quote-unquote get a better actor, but who doesn't bring the marketing cachet that Tyler Perry brings, how does that work?
Right. Well, I mean, based on what we've heard, it sounds like it is going to be Perry coming back, and they're not going to try to replace him. So it seems like they're sticking with him for whatever reason. Now, that doesn't mean Perry won't back out if he gets bad response, you know. But the thing is, Alex Cross has an A cinema score with fans after this weekend. Now, it didn't do all that great in the box office, but an A cinema score means that those who went to see it liked it. Now, that might be enough for him, and it might be enough for studios to decide, hey, let's just keep going with this Tyler Perry thing. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I'll be curious to see what it does in its second week, because I imagine the first week was mostly Tyler Perry fans, the diehards who will see him in anything. I'll be curious to see what the second week does and see what the response is. But to me, Alex Cross is just like a total mess from the very beginning, from start to finish. I mentioned to Nell how it's funny how John Reno is in the film, when he's one of my favorite actors. I love him, you know, from The Professional and and stuff like that. I love John Reno, and I know he's French. But how come every time I see him, I always feel like his French accent is fake? Like, I know he's French, and I know that's how he sounds. But
Right. Yeah, that did look a little suspect. That's a legitimate point again. Like, I know you're French. What's up? Just talk normal.
I know. It was just like, what the hell? I mean, his character was such a comic book character anyway. It was just ridiculous. He basically plays this some sort of city mogul or something like that, and that's who Matthew Fox's character is sort of taking out people around him, but we don't know why. And frankly, the reason why doesn't matter, because they didn't bother to reveal it until the very end anyway, and then it was a twist that didn't make any sense. It's just one of those things where I just felt like the plot was like, they just kind of threw it together. I never read the book that this one is based on of, so I don't know if that's how they did it in the book, but I certainly hope not. But Alex Cross for me was a 1 out of 5. I thought this was a disaster, like I said, from beginning to end.
Wow. Well, you know, like I said, man, you know, again, I think what we can all agree on, which will lead into a great segue for you, is that he is not going to be, well, he's on the short list for a Black Reveal Award, but
I'm sure he is.
He is 0-for-7. As a nominee, and if this role and the reaction to his role is any indication, he will be 0-for-8. Oh, man.
All right, Tim, I am going to reboot now. I'm going to do it now. But I really wanted to talk to you about the Black Reel Awards. So, I mean, if you could kind of tell the people about the Black Reel Awards. It's an annual awards that you do every single year that I am happy to be a part of, kind of honoring the best of the year's African-American performances, both in front of and behind the camera. If you could talk to people about that for a few minutes and what's coming up this year, talk about the history of it a little bit, and I will be back in just a couple of minutes.
All right. I will try to do my best.
Sir?
Well, basically the Black Reel Awards, Travis, as you know, I founded them back in 2000. Well, I actually created them. Growing up when I was a lot younger, it bothered me that I would watch award shows and that there were films that I saw African-American actors or actors of color, Hispanics, et cetera, who were constantly or consistently passed over for awards recognition. So back in 2000, myself and another colleague came up with the idea that we would honor African-Americans annually in three different disciplines, and those disciplines are as theatrical releases or feature films, independent films, and in television films. And the Black Reel Awards were born. We initially did them online, specifically with voters being able to, and actually without, we actually picking the actual winners and then posting the results online. And then we came up with the concept of creating a live show for it, which we actually physically did a show for the first time in 2002, another in 2004, and then another show in 2005. But since that point, we've been doing them online, and yourself, Travis, along with about a bevy of other film critics, have all participated in helping us select the nominees, and then later selecting the winners. I think part of what makes it such a challenge and a joy at the same time is that there's certain films that over the course of like the last several years where the Academy had not been honoring films have suddenly started to honor more films, as we've seen over the last 10 years with films like Monsters Ball, or films like Training Day with both Denzel Washington and Halle Berry, Ray with Jamie Foxx. Terrence Howard in Hustle and Flow in 2005. Of course, the big Dream Girls nominees from that year, Jennifer Hudson, Eddie Murphy, et cetera, and so on and so forth, even to Monique with Precious back in 2009. So what we've been doing with the Black Reel Awards, and it continues this year, really, and probably our most competitive year, is that we're looking at what looks like 27 categories this year, where we're going to be honoring everything, of course, the major categories, best actor, actress, best supporting actor, actress, best director, best film, and independent television and feature film. But we're also going to be looking at best voice performances, which are animated, you know, African Americans or Hispanic actors who are in animated films. We're looking at a huge bevy of independent work this year that we're going to honor, as well as a year that's probably not as strong in television films, but I think we're going to be good to go regardless with how that works out. So basically our nominees will be announced on Wednesday, December the 19th, and we will announce the winners on February the 7th, probably in a special show that we hope to have some of the winners be available to participate in that project. So that is my Black Reel Award rundown. As you know, I'm hoping at some point that you reboot and come back, Travis, so that we can have a back and forth as it relates to this. But I'm just, you know, just thinking that this year, as I said earlier, is going to be very, very competitive. You're looking at some of the films this year that I think are going to garner a lot of support that include Ben Zeitlin's film, Beast of the Southern Wild. You're looking at Ava DuVernay's film, The Middle of Nowhere, which I think is going to garner a lot of intense interest. That's not counting, you know, a film that I don't really think did well at the box office in Sparkle. Think Like a Man was a big film this year. Denzel Washington has got a couple of movies this year. Flight, which is hitting theaters in early November, along with Safe House from earlier this year that I thought he was pretty good in. Jamie Foxx and Kerry Washington, Sam Jackson and Django Unchained.
Now, are we going to see Django Unchained in time? Are we going to see Django Unchained in time for the Black Reel Awards?
Well, I think you'll see Django Unchained in time for the WAFCA Awards, to be perfectly honest. I mean, the film is finished. We will screen that film long before Christmas Day.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, Rivers' film, The Man with the Iron Fist, is also going to be a contender. Cloud Atlas, which we both see tomorrow. Tomorrow night. Going to be a contender. So
pack a lunch, my friend. pack a lunch for that one, my friend.
Well, you know, the three hour extravaganza, man. I mean, and again, you and I have had this conversation, and I used to have it with Brandon all the time. That, you know, these 3 hour movies, you know, I guess there's two schools of thought. If you can hold my interest over that time, you know, kind of like, say, Malcolm X, or say, try to think of another 3 hour film that I saw recently that I was like, you know, like one of those Lord of the Rings or the entire Lord of the Rings franchise. If you can hold my interest with it, you know, I'm good. But this movie, I'm telling you, did you sit next to me the night we looked at the trailer for this thing?
I don't think so.
And I was like, ooh.
The book is a tough read. I think that the movie, based on what the book is, and how the book reads to me, it probably should be 3 hours. But I still worry because there are lots of segments in the book that are really kind of not all that exciting. So I'm worried, and it seems like they're including almost every aspect of the book in the movie too. So I mean, I'm worried that we're going to be 30 minutes in, and I'm going to be looking at my watch. So that's what I'm worried about. But I worry about that with every 3 hour movie. So I mean, I guess that's not really any different. But I wish they could have started it a little bit earlier. Let's put it that way, rather than starting it.
You mean like started at like 6 o'clock?
Yes, or something. When there's these movies that are 180 minutes, you need to start a little bit early because some of us aren't going to get home until midnight. I mean, it's just one of those things. But anyway, back to the Black Reel Awards. It sounds like it's going to be another big year for that. When do we start voting for that anyway?
Voting for the Black Reel Awards opens, and hold on a second, I can tell you exactly. If that's Wednesday, December the 19th is the actual nomination day, voting takes place from Monday, December the 10th, to Friday, December the 14th.
Okay.
And hopefully what will happen is that the way voting is done, it's all done online. You guys receive a link to a ballot, of course. You vote. Mm-hmm. My team immediately gets the results, and we start kind of like computing what needs to be done.
Right.
And then hopefully, I guess, if voting closes on Friday, we'll have several days to not only put that stuff together, but to make sure that we've done a good job of notifying, or actually putting something together to notify the nominees, because we don't notify the nominees until after the nominations have been announced.
Right.
So it's an undertaking, man, and this year, it is really going to be – I'm anxious, to be perfectly honest, because as I said earlier, and you didn't get a chance to comment, that, you know, there are several categories where, you know, between Beast of the Southern Wild and Middle of Nowhere, it's going to be a tug of war between Quvenzhané Wallace and Emiyatsi Corinaldi. Those
right.
two are the lead. They're like 1 and 1A, and you put them in any order you want to put them in for best actress, best
right.
breakthrough performance. I just don't know how you make that choice.
And then you've got Tyler Perry for Alex Cross you have to worry about. You've got Terrence Howard for Red Tails. I mean, you got all these great performances that we're going to have to weed through this season. It's gonna be tough. I tell you, it's gonna be tough.
See, you're being a horse's a right now. But as you're saying that, I'm saying you're gonna have to have Denzel Washington in one of his two roles against Jamie Foxx in his role in Django Unchained. So I mean, that's a legitimate sticking point as well.
Based on what I'm hearing from everybody who saw Flight at the New York Film Festival, it's one of the best things he's done in a long time. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And I'm looking forward to seeing how Robert Zemeckis does coming back, because he hasn't made a live-action movie since Castaway. I mean, that was 12 years ago. So I'm anxious to see how he does coming back into that from the world of, you know, motion capture animation all those years, and seeing how he does. So I'm looking forward to Flight quite a bit. And we see that in, about a week? No, we see it on Wednesday, I think. So
I have an action-packed week. I mean, this week alone is Cloud Atlas, Flight, Skyfall, and Lincoln. Like, in 3 days.
Yeah. What day is Skyfall?
Skyfall is Wednesday morning, man.
Oh, see, now I need to pay attention. Okay.
Skyfall is Wednesday morning. Flight is Wednesday night. Lincoln is Thursday night. Yeah, man.
I need to pay attention to my emails. And we're already getting the screeners for the awards coming up too.
Wait a minute. Have you gotten anything in addition to Exotic Marigold?
I got The Deep Blue Sea with Rachel Weisz and Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, I didn't get that yet. Or maybe he was supposed to bring it and it didn't come. So, yeah. But I love this time of year. I tell people all the time, joking, that on Thanksgiving, we're the most popular group of people we know, man, because everywhere you show up, man, people are like, movies!
Yeah, I know. We're already talking about it, you know, for Thanksgiving, which movies that are going to get watched over Thanksgiving. So it's one of those things. All right, so we talked about Alex Cross. I know you did not see Paranormal Activity 4, so I won't even ask you about it.
Ask me.
What's the point? I'll give a quick synopsis of Paranormal Activity 4, and then we'll let you get out of here, Tim. But Paranormal Activity 4 is obviously the fourth film in the franchise, started a few years ago. It continues the story of Katie, who is the girl who was possessed in the first film, and she's sort of been... we don't know what she's been building up to all this time. We saw in Paranormal Activity 2 that she kidnapped her sister's son named Hunter. And then the last film, Paranormal Activity 3, was sort of an origin story that kind of told the story of Katie and her sister. Include us into kind of the reasons why Katie was possessed. So we don't know what her plan is. And this film sort of continues that story a little bit. It takes place 5 years after Paranormal Activity 2, and it follows a suburban family who, of course, become terrorized in their own home after the new kid who lives next door, who lives across the street, comes to stay with them for a few days after a family emergency. The usual scares and haunts are there in this film, and I think that people who like the Paranormal Activity franchise will be pleased with the scares. The directors Ariel Schulman and Henry Joost, who did the last film, bring a new technological wrinkle to the story by doing some clever things with the Xbox Kinect. It has this really cool infrared thing that it does when you turn off the lights. It looks awesome, and it's spooky as hell. So I got to give them credit for that. In terms of the story, it doesn't really progress things all that much, and that's my biggest problem with Paranormal Activity. I think that they've done a good job of building a mythos surrounding the events that are going on, but this one sort of takes a lateral move and doesn't move things forward at all, and I think that's my biggest problem with it. People who just go there looking for the same scares that they got in the previous three films will be happy, but those who want to see it, the story develop a little bit, may be disappointed. Overall, Paranormal Activity 4, I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. If you like the others, you'll probably enjoy this one. All right.
Alrighty. Alrighty.
I know this is not your thing. Did you see Smashed?
I did see Smashed, and I think you liked it way more than I did.
Well, I'm curious to get your opinion on that then. Smashed is a film, a big festival hit from Sundance. One of those movies I missed last year that I was dying to see. Stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Aaron Paul as a couple whose basically their relationship was hinging on the fact that they're both total drunks. And basically that's like the catalyst and the glue that keeps their relationship together is that they're both drunks. Well, when she finally realizes that alcohol is what's forcing her to make terrible decisions in her life, she decides to get sober, and her relationship starts to crumble because he's not willing to undergo the same process. And anybody who's been in a relationship knows you can't have one person who's a drunk and another person who's sober. I mean, it's just not one of those things that can work. I love this film a lot, and I think a lot of it is Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I mean, she's always been an actress that I dig. And I think she brings a really powerful performance. And I wrote that it reminded me a lot of Gina Rowlands in A Woman Under the Influence. Very complex. She's a strong woman with who's really trying to overcome some things that have really broken her down over the course of her life. But I really dug this film a lot. It doesn't really break a whole lot of new ground, but I thought she was fantastic. And Aaron Paul was good as well. What did you think, Tim?
Well, I've seen this movie before, and I think the best analogy, there are two movies that I thought of when I watched it. One was When a Man Loves a Woman, the Andy Garcia, Meg Ryan film. But
which was on today, I might add.
Right.
On this morning.
Film, right. But the film that I really think is a kindred spirit to this film is the 1962 film, The Days of Wine and Roses, with Jack Lemmon and Lee Remick, where literally it was about a couple, as this couple was in Smash, that, you know, got together and drank and then had problems when one decided they wanted to be sober and the other did not. I mean, and the thing that and I agree with you that I thought I forget the young lady's name who starred in the lead. I thought she was
Mary
really solid.
Yeah,
I thought she was solid. I think for me, the flaw in the story, which didn't make sense, and somebody explained it to me that, you know, alcohol is such a potent disease, mm-hmm. that without spoiling it, I just honestly believe that if it comes between your drinking and your relationship, you got to make a decision. And if picking your drinking over your woman, Having an issue with that. Part did not necessarily work for me, but I thought her performance was great. I thought that the film did a great job, much like The Days of Wine and Roses, of showing the outcome of somebody who is in, you know, entrapped in that disease,
right,
where you wake up in strange places, you don't know what the hell is happening to you,
yeah,
your body is doing strange
things. Those first couple of things that happened to her are really crazy.
Right.
To say the least. She's a school teacher, for anybody who doesn't know, which adds all sorts of problems to the movie. One of the problems I had with it, though, and this turned out to be a kind of a big one, and I was finally able to kind of overlook it. I didn't like, there's a subplot that goes on there involving her in the school where she kind of tells this really big lie that haunts her for the entire film, basically. I felt like too much of that was played up for comedy. And a lot of that has to do with the characters played by Megan Mullally and Nick Offerman, who also happened to be husband and wife in real life. But anyway, he plays a guy who's an ex-alcoholic and kind of introduces her to AA, while Megan Mullally is her school principal. And I felt like their characters were played up for laughs a little too much. Considering the movie is really sort of it, otherwise it's powerful and really hard hitting, and then their roles just don't seem to really fit. Like Offerman's character, he sort of he expresses like feelings for Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character that and it doesn't really seem to fit with the story. And Megan Mullally, her character is just sort of really overly enthusiastic about something, and it's just like, okay, that stuff doesn't work. And it felt like the director and the writer were trying to take their comedic styles and jam them into the film where they don't really belong. But those are my biggest pet peeves with it that bothered me. But otherwise, I mean, I love this film almost from beginning to end. And I was so taken by Winstead because she's such a perky, bright young actress. And you can still see like hints of that in her, but the alcohol has sort of sapped her of a little bit of that. You know what I mean? Like her character's really vivacious and outgoing, and she's always the life of the party. And then she kind of hits that point where the alcohol stops being fun, and it starts to get a little embarrassing, and then it's kind of scary, you know. And there's that kind of tightrope she's walking there, and I thought that she really portrayed that well.
I agree with you. I think that, I don't have an issue. I thought her performance was tight. Where the film, as I said, dropped off of me was more in the script,
mm-hmm.
more so than anything else, that I just philosophically did not support the direction that the director took the film in. And I was like, that's kind of ugly.
You just didn't like the way the husband handled it?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that. In a way, I guess it makes it a better film because it gives us something to debate back and forth. But I think that in a situation like that, which if you made that as a larger, big-budgeted film, that person would have to make a different choice in order for that film to be more amenable to audiences. I can understand that it has more of an art house sort of a philosophy and ending. And even if you think about, like I talked earlier about The Days of Wine and Roses, The Days of Wine and Roses ended with them apart. It didn't necessarily end up with them getting back together and being in love. They had to learn how to love within the limits of their relationship as it had now newly been reconstructed, which in a way is, I think, what you get with Smash, but I guess I didn't like the execution of it as much in this film as I did in the original film.
But wasn't there some, I mean, and I remember that film not as vividly as you do, I think, but I think the difference between this film and that one is you've got somebody in this film who absolutely, not only does he totally distrust the sobering system, like the AA system, like he completely distrusts it right from the very beginning, but you also have a guy who doesn't acknowledge that he even has a problem to begin with. I mean, like he doesn't see that she even has a problem. I mean, to me, that's where the kind of the difference lies, I guess.
Right.
I mean, if that's the case, then they kind of have to go in different directions. But
I agree with you. I just thought that the way his character was painted, his character was immature the entire film.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
You know, there's a great scene early in the film where she shared something with him and tells him to keep it to himself. And, of course, you find out later on that he not only told him, but he told about four or five other people.
Yep. Exactly.
So that was an interesting. It's an interesting film. I think it's a solid piece of work. It's something that I wouldn't mind watching again. But like I said, that's why I enjoy talking film with you, because sometimes I can point out why I don't like certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's a philosophical script disagreement.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the performances of the cast, which I thought they did a great job. Even in a smaller role, I thought Octavia Spencer was pretty good.
Yep.
I forget the guy who's her AA quarter.
Nick Offerman.
Yeah. Maybe. So, and the way that was written was even a tad on the strange side.
Right. Yep. That's what I was talking about. That I didn't like the way they. I didn't like the direction his character ultimately went in. But yeah, I guess another thing that I really did like about it is that. It didn't try to paint AA as the solution to everything. In fact, I would say her life got worse considerably while she was trying to sober up. I mean, she had to actually face life full force. You know what I mean? Without the cover of alcohol kind of blunting everything for her, and she didn't know how to handle that at all. So I thought that was a very interesting aspect of the film as well. Ultimately, I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so basically, we're making kind of the same points that we both think that the performances are good. As I said, I didn't necessarily read a review that you wrote, but I saw some comments that you had written, and I was like, well, Travis clearly likes this movie, you know, in ways that I don't like it. But, you know, I like it. I mean, I like her performance. I just, you know, again, I'm not a screenwriter, and maybe I should become one, but... I've just watched too many films, and I know you have as well. So you and I
need to get together and write a book so we can have our friend Nell publish it for us. That's what we need to do.
Well, absolutely. I thought you was going to say we need to get together and write a screenplay. I'm like, I'm down with that.
Oh, we can do that, too. We can have our friend Kevin shoot it for us. since he's the filmmaker now. All right. So, Tim, as always, man, I appreciate you coming on here and kind of tag teaming with me on this show and filling in the gaps while I dealt with our technical problems, which it seems to have been resolved. So I appreciate that, man. I really do.
Not a problem, man. I appreciate it, man. I've been sitting here watching fantasy football, and they're killing me right now. I'm like, please, can you please get these overtime games off the air? Because I had a huge lead, and suddenly I don't.
Yeah, I hate those games, man. When somebody gets a last-second touchdown or the game goes in overtime, you should have heard me screaming today because, for whatever reason, the Buccaneers could not stop Lance Moore. I mean, it's like, really, Lance Moore? I walked into my game this weekend thinking I didn't have to worry about Lance Moore, and here he is getting like 20 points, and I'm like, the Bucs just could not stop him, and I was just screaming. But I've got the Raiders.
Well, apparently they couldn't stop Vincent Jackson on the other side. So.
They couldn't, and I traded for him a couple of weeks ago. I traded, and you'll probably like this trade. I traded away Fred Jackson and Steve Smith for Jonathan Stewart and Vincent Jackson.
Oh, that's a great move.
Yeah, and somebody was like, why'd you do that? And I was like, well, I just traded Young in a freaking dynasty league. I got rid of Steve Smith, and I just picked up Vincent Jackson, who's like 25, and he's much better. And I was like,
hey,
so,
man.
So I was like, that's why I did it. So, yeah, I'm happy with that.
He said, that's why I did it, huh?
That's why I did it. But anyway, thanks a lot, man. Tell people where they can find you.
Man, you just got to go to Google, man. I'm doing a lot of stuff, man. But first and foremost, you can hear Travis and I talking film along with a couple of my other friends every week on The Big Show. Keeping it real with Film Gordon Thursdays at 1 o'clock. Ow, that hurt. At 1 o'clock. And I'm sorry. As I was saying that, Mark Sanchez was getting hit by like four Patriots as he coughed up the ball.
It's on over my shoulder, I saw it.
So, yeah. Needless to say, man, you can find me on there. And, of course, as I tell people all the time, you just Google Film Gordon, and it's just a ton of stuff, man. Facebook, Twitter, other social media engines. Travis and I are on WETA. We're just doing what we do.
Yep. That's it, man. All right. I appreciate you calling in, man. I really do. Thanks a lot.
All right, so, brother, that'll work.
All right, I'll see you. I'll see you tomorrow night.
Yes, you will. Take
popcorn,
care, man.
Popcorn's on you. Talk to you later, man.
All right, man.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. That was our homie, Tim Gordon, signing out. All right, let's pick up with some of the stuff that we usually do and get that out of the way now. Let's jump into the box office and see how some of these movies we just talked about did. Number one this week was Paranormal Activity 4, which opened at $30.2 million. That is less than the last two Paranormal Activity movies did, by a fairly large margin, I believe. But Paramount doesn't really care, because this one is the most expensive of them all, and it only cost $5 million. So the fact that it's done $30 million already, they could care less. Marketing's probably not that much either, since everybody knows about Paranormal Activity at this point. They know it's coming out around Halloween time. And Paramount, and I wrote about this on the site, is that I think they've done a really good job of promoting this movie overseas. We had the Japanese Paranormal Activity a couple years ago. They got the Latin American one coming out next year. And the result is that these movies play really well globally. So in fact, I think their grosses pretty much equal whatever they make here domestic. So these movies do well everywhere. So these aren't going to go away anytime soon. I know there's been a lot of people clamoring for it to just go away now after this fourth one. That's not going to happen. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they start going 3D or some crap like that. Number two is Argo, Ben Affleck's film. This movie did great in its second weekend, only slipping 16%. That's incredible. It's at $43.2 million now, and it hasn't even really got its Oscar bump yet. Once they start pumping it for Best Picture and him for Best Director, expect it to go right back up. Number three is Hotel Transylvania. It is at $119 million now. Number four is Taken 2, which was number one for 2 weeks. It's now at $106 million. Number five is Alex Cross, and this one made $11.75 million in its first weekend. It's not really very good. Tyler Perry continues to kind of be an unproven commodity outside of the Madea films, at least as a leading man. So I don't know what this says for it, but like I told Tim earlier, it has an A cinema score, which means that the people who did see it liked it. I'll be curious to see how that score goes in its second week. I'm sure it'll drop. Number six is Sinister, with $32 million. Number seven is Here Comes the Boom. It's at 23. Number eight is Pitch Perfect, which continues to do well. It's at $45 million right now. Number nine is Frankenweenie, which really struggled, $28.3 million its total. And number 10, is Looper at $57.8 million total. All right, let's talk about DVDs that are coming out this upcoming Tuesday. This is kind of a mixed bag week. There's some good stuff and there's some crap in there too. But the top two films that I have that are coming out this week, number one is Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Anyone who remembers our Midway Point show, our Best of the Year So Far show from back in June, knows that Seeking a Friend for the End of the World was my top movie of the year at that point. It's still pretty high up there, not going to lie. It's probably in my top five still. And this one stars Steve Carell and Keira Knightley as two people who fall in love during a road trip during the last couple days of the world's existence. Very funny film, very poignant film, and a tough film to make, I imagine, walking that balance of humor and kind of sadness. I mean, we are talking about the end of the world here. But I think Lorena Scafaria, in her directorial debut, does a fantastic job. She also wrote the script. Has some great music in that film as well. And the other movie is Take This Waltz, and this is the next film from director Sarah Polley. This is her follow-up to Away From Her, and this one features an Oscar-worthy performance from Michelle Williams. I know, shocker, right? And basically she plays a woman who's been married for a couple years, married to Seth Rogen, I might add, in one of his best dramatic turns. She plays a woman who's been married for a couple years, and she kind of falls in love with a guy who lives right across the street. And they embark on something that she really shouldn't be embarking in. But it's a very very insightful film that I think takes a really deep look at marriage and the things it takes for marriage to last and kind of things it takes for marriage to not last. So a very good film. I definitely pre-ordered it, just like I pre-ordered Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. Other DVDs coming out this week, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. This movie did not do well at the box office, despite its outlandish premise of the 16th president slashing vampires for a living. Medea's Witness Protection, starring Tyler Perry as Medea, of course. That was kind of on the low end of Tyler Perry movies in terms of box office gross. I did not see it. I try to avoid these Medea movies whenever I can. The Invisible War, a documentary that I want everyone to check out. It takes a look at kind of a problem that we don't really hear talked about on the news, and that is rape in the military. This movie will piss you off real quick. Definitely check that one out to see something that, like I said, you don't really get to hear talked about. Magic Mike comes out on DVD and Blu-ray. I also pre-ordered this. Yes, I did. Channing Tatum produced it, co-wrote it, stars in it, of course. And for the ladies, yes, he takes off his clothes a lot. That's kind of the point. Crooked Arrows with Brandon Routh. That one's about Native American lacrosse players. Interesting film. Not necessarily a good one, but interesting. Blade Runner 30th Anniversary comes out, which, you know, kind of interesting now since we're on the verge of seeing the sequel from Ridley Scott coming out probably in a couple of years. And Quantum of Solace, to coincide with the upcoming release of Skyfall. So those are all the DVDs and Blu-rays that I thought were interesting this week. I'm going to run down some quick news real fast, and we're going to get out of here. Marvel has finally set Ant-Man for release on November 6th, 2015. Now, Ant-Man is a film that's been long talked about. It's had Edgar Wright attached to direct it for a very long time. Edgar Wright's the guy who did Shaun of the Dead and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. November 6, 2015, obviously after the Avengers sequel comes out, by about 6 months or something like that. I think about 6 months after that. So my thought that it would be like the last film we see before the Avengers sequel is rubbish now. It's totally scrapped. But now I guess they can get to the business of casting, and I'm curious to see who they're going to get to play the role of Ant-Man. I assume it's going to be Giant Man, Henry Pym in the role. At least that's the version of Ant-Man they're going with. A lot of people want Nathan Fillion for the role. I think he'd be perfect. But we'll see. I'm curious to see what happens. Michael Bay is rumored to be seeking a female lead for Transformers 4. I would argue that he's had a female lead all three films with Shia LaBeouf, but yeah, that's just me. Yeah, supposedly he's looking for a female lead for the film. That's really about all there was to the rumor. No, it doesn't really surprise me. You know, I'm sure he's thumbing through his latest issue of Victoria's Secret right now trying to find who that's going to be. I assume it won't be Rosie Huntington-Whiteley. I'm just a hunch. Warner Brothers is seeking out summer of 2015 for their Justice League film. Now, obviously, that's the same summer as the Avengers sequels coming out. So we're going to be seeing the Avengers versus Justice League the same way we got the Avengers versus the Dark Knight Rises this summer. So that's something to keep an eye out for. Warner Brothers, I haven't been a huge fan of the way they've been doing things. I feel like they should be just copying the Marvel model. And right now, we don't know what their approach is going to be. Like, we don't know if we're going to see Henry Cavill's Superman from Man of Steel showing up in Justice League. That's kind of the rumor. But there's also rumors going around that they're going to spin off these characters into solo films, but use different actors in the role, and they might not have anything to do with Justice League. So it's just, you know, I don't understand why they want to go that route. Connectivity seems to be the thing to do. And the reason why is because the obvious, you know, branding positives that come out of that, you know, it doesn't make sense for them not to want to do that. I don't see what the point is. Yeah, it worked for Christopher Nolan. I mean, you didn't see him having to cross over with Green Lantern or anything, but Nolan is a different story. Nolan is an auteur. Nolan had his own thing before there was Green Lantern. So if they were to start off at the same time right now, Christopher Nolan, Batman Begins, and like Green Lantern, you damn well bet they would be crossing over. So I just don't understand the reason why they wouldn't want to do that. Couple of quick things. Sam Raimi, looks like he may be directing the Poltergeist remake after all. David Lindsay Abaire is the writer. He confirmed he's going to be writing it this week. And he revealed that it was Sam Raimi who's going to be directing it. Now, it hasn't been confirmed or anything, but it does seem like that would be the case. Or at the very least, Lindsay Abaire certainly thinks that it's going to be Sam Raimi. So, I mean, it seems like something he would do. I mean, he's already in the midst of remaking his Evil Dead, his classic Evil Dead film, which we also have the trailer. The leaked trailer for that is up on the site right now, and it looks fantastic. So if you want to see that, then go to the site and check that out. But it seems like something Raimi would do. Obviously, he's not averse to remaking horror classics. So I wouldn't be surprised if that turned out to be true. And it looks like Sony may be planning to kill Gwen Stacy. Just last week, we probably talked about it on last week's show, Shailene Woodley from The Descendants was talked about for the role of Mary Jane Watson in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And coming off the heels of that, we're hearing this rumor that Sony is planning on killing off Gwen Stacy. The story was in THR, and they said outright that Sony's planning to kill off Gwen Stacy. Or at least they're leading up to that. And that Mary Jane will probably have a smaller role in the sequel, and then it would expand in the third film. Now, we know that they're already planning this as a trilogy. So it would seem to reason that they would kill off Gwen Stacy in this second film, have Mary Jane be there, you know, and then be the shoulder he cries on in the third film, and their relationship begins from there. Now, Emma Stone is not signed to play Gwen Stacy yet. She's still in negotiations. Now, back in August, I believe it was August, she had said that she wants to have the character die in the iconic manner that she died in the comic, which we all know the bridge scene and all that stuff. I thought they hinted at it pretty blatantly in the first film when he threw her out the window and kind of snatched her back with his webbing. I thought they hinted that was a clear shot, saying, hey, you know, we know what's up. We know what's coming. But yeah, she seems to really want that to happen, and I'm thinking that it might be part of the negotiations for her, that she might be negotiating with them to have them kill her off in this second film. So she can go off and do whatever she wants to do. She's got plenty of stuff on her plate already. So I think we might be seeing that happen in this next film. So don't be surprised if that's what occurs, if you see Gwen Stacy falling off that bridge. But the curious thing is, there's no Green Goblin yet either. So, I mean, they're talking about Norman Osborn being in the, not Norman Osborn, but his son Harry Osborn being in the sequel. So I don't know how they're planning on playing that out. Maybe they'll do it with a different villain and not the Green Goblin. I would actually like to not see the Green Goblin for the entire trilogy. I think it's an overused character, an overused villain at this point. They can do something else. Spider-Man has more villains than any other comic book character this side of the Flash, so they really don't need to use the Green Goblin. As much as he is Spider-Man's arch nemesis, he has at least a half dozen more who are just as bad. That's really the main stuff I had news wise. I had something down written here about Mike Epps playing Richard Pryor and the Nina Simone biopic, which I find interesting, but I do also think it's a good role for him. The most interesting thing about that biopic has been the uproar about Zoe Saldana playing Nina Simone, with, you know, you're getting the usual outcry about whitewashing and stuff like that. Yeah, it's prevalent for black people, too. darker-skinned real-life people are often portrayed by actors and actresses who are lighter-skinned, and a lot of people take offense to that for good reason. My problem with her playing the role is that I just don't think she's good enough. Zoe Saldana is a fine actress to some extent, but I've yet to see her play that role that makes me think she can play Nina Simone. So that's my thing. It has nothing to do with her skin color. All right, but that's all I had for news. Trailers on the site this week. We've got a new one for Holy Motors. That's the rather bizarre film from Leo Carax. That one's on the site. New trailer for A Haunted House. That's Marlon Wayans' new horror spoof film, where he's going to be spoofing Paranormal Activity and other found footage films. Comes out in January. Trailer for Save the Date. That's the new comedy from Alison Brie and Lizzie Kaplan. Looks like a lot of fun. New trailer for Jack Reacher, which has Tom Cruise not looking like Jack Reacher. A bunch of character posters, character trailers for The Man with the Iron Fists. Those are amazing. They've been coming out like every day this week. And as I said earlier, we have the leaked trailer for the Evil Dead remake on the site, and also the trailer for Carrie, the remake of Stephen King's film, Stephen King's novel, Brian De Palma's film. A remake of that starring Chloe Moretz looks fantastic. That's on the site as well. And that's about it for us, actually. Next week on the show, we're going to have... we're hoping to have an interview with Michael J. Bassett, the director of Silent Hill Revelation 3D, and we'll also have a review of that film. We'll have reviews of Cloud Atlas, and also Fun Size. That's the new film from Josh Schwartz, the guy who made The O.C. and Gilmore Girls and all that crap I don't watch. And also Chasing Mavericks comes out next week with Gerard Butler. That's the surfing film. Probably won't talk about that one all that much because... it's a Gerard Butler film about surfing, and neither one of us has any interest in that. But anyway, that is it for this week's show. I apologize for the technical difficulties we had in the first block, but I also want to thank Tim Gordon for covering for me during those moments. Thank you to him as well, and thank you to all of you who have been listening to PDC Live, man. We've been on the air for 5 years, and we wouldn't be here at all if it wasn't for all of you. So I especially thank you, as my own career has grown to some extent. So I do appreciate all of you who listen in and check out the site every day. You make it all worthwhile. So that's it. You can follow us on Facebook, of course. Become a fan. Like us. We're nearing 1,100 fans. So tell your friends. You know, we give away advanced screening passes. We have a lot of news going on during the course of the day. So if your friends are into movies, free movies, or just movie news, trailers, all that stuff, tell them to like us on Facebook and read the site every day. You can follow me on Twitter at Punchy Critic. John is at Punch Drunk John. You want to email us at punchdrunkcritics@gmail.com. Or if you want to email me personally, it's punchdrunkcritics@yahoo.com. I answer all questions, and you guys have been really good at sending me questions about things, especially and especially telling me when I screw something up, which is often. So don't be afraid to tell me that. And as always, send us your comments and questions and your insight. We look forward to your input every single day. But that's it for us. I'm Travis Hobson. John will be back next week. And that's it. I'm out of here. Later.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
I'm not great at farewells, so, that'll do, pig.
That's the worst goodbye I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
Because people didn't need to know. When I was ready to tell them, they would find out.